Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the January 8th, 2012 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard. It's the podcast devoted to the discussion of news and politics from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy, Objectivism. I'm your host, Amy Peikoff, and here are the topics I have planned to discuss today. First, we'll talk about the latest on Iran. Is it a real threat to us, as some people have asked me to talk about? And are sanctions an act of war, as Ron Paul and others have said that they are? Second, should Obama be impeached, as some are saying, for making non-recess appointments? And third, the Iowa caucus is over, and we also have been seeing the gloves coming off since the caucus in the two debates that we had within a span of 10 or 12 hours. Any new thoughts on the GOP field from you? I have some thoughts from the recent debates and other things that have come out this week that I'll share with you. Then we have a tribute to John David Lewis, whom we lost to cancer this week, and a couple more things to talk about after that. So we are on the extended two-hour format this time, so I think we're going to have more than enough time to talk about all of these things. Before we dive in, a couple of logistics. Those of you who are attending live here can interact with me either by calling. Please do call in and share your thoughts. 760-888-5817, 760-888-5817. 5817, or you can type questions or comments in the chat room, and I see some of you are in there already, so go ahead and do that as well. Okay, so first, Iran. Many of you know that not only the United States, but other countries are threatening sanctions against Iran because of Iran's developing a nuclear program and potentially a nuclear weapon. On the one hand, of course, they keep touting their nuclear program in a way that seems very militaristic, the way that they brag about it all the time. Absolutely. And then on the other hand, they want to say, oh, we're just developing a nuclear program for peaceful purposes. So they're trying to have it both ways right now. And clearly, United States and other countries in the world are not believing this. And there
was a state sponsor of terrorism.
Yeah, they're a state sponsor of terrorism. But they're also not believing that this nuclear program is purely peaceful. And in fact, we talked about it on the show a little while ago. The IAEA came out with a report that said that probably within the next couple of years, Iran might be able to develop some nuclear capability. And then you hear news of, you know, a missile test, a mid-range missile test here or there. So they're trying to say, hey, we're going to be able to do what we've been saying we want to do for so long, which is wipe out the quote-unquote occupying of Israel. That's what they'd like to do. So that's been going on. And so what we have said in response is that we would like to impose economic sanctions on them. And in reaction, they have said that if we impose and other countries impose economic sanctions, and in particular, if we refuse to buy any oil that is exported from Iran, Iran has said that it will close off the Strait of Hormuz, which is right along, as I understand, the southern border of Iran. And what it does is it controls the flow between the Persian Gulf and then what's the other body of water? I had it a little bit ago, but it's, oh yeah, the Gulf of Oman. So it, right off of the coast, Iran says, one guy was blustering this last week, and he said, we could close it as easily as drinking a glass of water. So I don't know
they're
if that's...
masters of the universe.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a common saying in, you know, in Farsi, but in any event, that's what he said. So the question is, first of all, I mean, we're imposing sanctions. Are sanctions an act of war? We've heard Ron Paul say in a number of the debates that sanctions are an act of war.
Ron Paul will always mouth the enemies propagandizes,
right.
which is what he owes us.
Yeah.
Talks about what Palestinians have said, what Osama bin Laden has said, what Iran has said.
Yeah.
Just ask if we'd be heard well because of the sound.
Yeah. Are we able to be heard, everyone? We wanted to just make sure that
because
you can
last
hear
week
us.
The sound was a little off.
Last week we discovered that there are not one but two different sound preferences.
Yeah.
And so one of them was set correctly and the other one was set incorrectly, and consequently you had bad sound. Can you hear us pretty well? Type us something in the comments in the chat room there if you can. Yay, excellent. Thanks very much, Martin. Okay,
thanks,
so
Martin.
So in terms of sanctions, right, what is a sanction? A sanction just says I refuse to purchase, or I'm going to have my entire country, if I'm a leader of a country, I say I refuse to have anybody in my country do business with your country. The sanction might be with respect to only particular industries, but I would think that more commonly it would be, you know, cut off trade entirely between the two countries. And so what it is, in effect, it's one country's refusal to have anybody in that country do business with another country. Is that an act of war? Because what Ron Paul, I've heard him say, is that sanctions are an act of war. And I think I heard him say, with respect to this Strait of Hormuz thing, that they are just doing this in self-defense.
And the kidnapping Americans and flying planes into buildings, those act of war as well? Or
yeah.
Like Ron Paul?
Yeah. I don't know. But it is not an act of war to say, I won't trade with you. I mean, you know.
Liberty.
I mean, I would confine calling an act of war to be something that involves the initiation of force.
Yeah.
Right.
An act of war should be an act of war, not, you know, not doing something, withholding something.
Right. And I would think that Ron Paul, if anybody, would understand this, because I think he understands the difference between economic power and political power. But I drew this analogy between these. Richard S. is on. He says, we dress provocatively, and that means that we deserve to be raped, right? That you've heard that
Martin
whole
has
right?
This great line.
Tell us what
means
Martin
peace,
says.
And sanctions are an act of war.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I don't know what he thought of that. But
yeah. You know, there are these people who talk about economic power and political power, and we actually talked about that a little bit last week because the interviewer of Steve Jobs from 1995 tried to throw that at Steve Jobs, and he said, well, you know, you have all this power. What is your responsibility? Mm-hmm. And Jobs looked at him quizzically and said, power, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And it's because if you have, for instance, the ability to hire somebody for a job or the ability to extend a contract to somebody or, you know, compete in a certain way in a certain field, you're still operating on the premise of voluntarily trading or not trading with somebody.
Yeah.
You're either going to offer the job, the contract, the business, the money, the purchases to somebody else, or you're not. And if it's yours,
like, I mean,
you have the right to do it.
I think about it. I don't know. It's like, if you don't give me your money, you're forcing me to, you know what I mean? You want me to take
yeah,
it? It's like,
yeah.
It doesn't, you know what I mean or not?
Yeah. And so I want you
to buy this thing, but if you don't buy it, I'm going to, you know, pull a gun because I will initiate, you know, your.
Yeah. So I just disagree. I don't think sanctions are an act of war. And I was tweeting a little bit of this last night.
That has to be argued
during
it's
the debate. Yeah, but this is the thing I think that they got caught up in. Ron Paul believes that free trade is some out of context absolute.
Yep. Yep.
And that anytime you interfere with free trade, that is an initiation of force. So, I mean, now think about it in a different way. But now, if sanctions meant that we were going to go and put our battleships all around Iran and say, you can't trade with anybody else, like we were going to actually use force to prevent them from trading, that's one thing. But if what sanctions are is that we say we're not going to buy from them, I don't think we've bought from them forever. But we get other countries to agree not to buy from them.
But what they have to offer,
and that's not initiation of force.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean,
you're not initiating force, and it is not self-defense, therefore, for Iran to go out and close off this Strait of Hormuz. I don't think it owns that property. If Iran actually owns the Strait of Hormuz, that's a whole different ballgame. But if it owns it and then it had made license agreements with other people and you know, it's going to say, well, we're going to renege on our license agreements. That's an initiation force. So it would be Iran in this situation that would be initiating force. Because I assume it's either not Iran's property or it could be their property, but that they've made these license agreements for everybody else to be able to go through.
The Ron Pullers on Twitter and Facebook, you know, they'll be like, basically, yeah, free trade is the answer to all, right?
Yeah.
Even the countries who are not involved with free trade, who are actually dictatorships, who want, who are wage wars against other countries, but they blank out at that point. So, well, if we free trade with them, then they'll be good.
Well, and then here's the thing. How dare the United States or the other governments around the world interfere with all the Ron Paulites or the Palestinians or whatever you want to call
the
them
Paulers,
that want to trade with Iran because they love free trade, right? So I think the thing that they focus on is they focus on the government telling its citizens or the companies
that
you can't trade with these other companies. But this is where I come in and I say, well, look, you would not do this. You would not impose sanctions unless you believe it is necessary to protect your country against a threat from the other country.
Iran has blood on its hands.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
So then the question comes down to, is there a threat in this case that is substantial enough to say that we need to do something in order to eliminate or prevent the threat from occurring? And then if so, you say, okay, sanctions, economic sanctions are appropriate. And then if you're telling your citizens, don't trade with Iran in this case, you're doing it because those citizens trading with Iran makes Iran economically better off and able to fund the weapon program that's going to hit us.
And legitimizes them in a lot of ways also.
Yeah, so it is not an act of war to withhold trade, and I do not think is improper initiation of force by government against its citizens to tell its citizens that it can't trade in situations where trading is going to fund and further a threat to your country. So I completely reject Ron Paul's argument.
With them, just one thing also about the mentality. Like Ron Paul is in the Islamist peace camp. I mean, it's like he said, I have, you know, Islam can't be in war with us. So meaning, if they're at war with us, we must have done something. We must have made them be at war with us. I mean, that's it. So therefore, trade trade is the answer. I mean, it's
yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I mean, it just kind of goes into, I was...
If it's Islamist peace and they're at war with us, then we have to trade with them.
I was looking over again the piece by John Lewis about our foreign policy of self-abnegation. And Ron Paul speaks to that the best of anybody because he's the one who says everything is our fault.
Everything.
And Rush Limbaugh had that funny parody about problem, right?
We're the problem. You know, with that pathetic voice, but... It wasn't a real parody.
Right.
If you really think about it. If anyone heard it, you got to listen to it. It's very funny.
Now, Robert here from New York City, he says, we should destroy their nukes so that they really know what an act of war is.
Yeah.
But we won't.
No, we won't.
I'll give you the latest from a news story from Leon Panetta today, and you can judge for yourself about what we'll do. First of all, he says that if Iran closes off the Strait of Hormuz, that will be crossing a red line. I don't know why he's using this red line terminology.
Wait, who used that?
This is Leon Panetta.
Okay, because Muslims have used that term, the red line.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So I guess he's speaking.
Speaking their language. Yeah. I don't know.
I hope he speaks their language fully, though.
So he has promised to do something that they would actually take action to reopen the strait so that it's true that one-fifth of the world's oil supply that flows through this strait would be cut off for a short period of time if Iran drank their glass of water and closed off the Strait of Hormuz. But we would come in and take action and reopen the strait. And I think we are in position to do that. I remember that we put a battle carrier or something through the strait, and then Iran was blustering again. They said, well, don't make it come back again. You know, it's better for you if it doesn't come back again. So
they're
peacocks strutting their feathers around or something. Everybody's making their, you know, kind of blustering.
Because they know that we can wipe them off the face of the earth in a split second. That's why they do that.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, because it says that Panetta and also the other person who was part of this was General Martin Dempsey. He was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And so they have promised to to reopen the strait, take action to reopen the strait if Iran closes it. And then it says that Panetta and Dempsey suggested that the U.S. had the military capability to stop any attempt by Iran to develop a nuclear weapon, although neither would offer details. And then they talk about, you know, if U.S. makes a strike first and, you know, U.S. prefers that that Israel, if they are going to make a strike, that they work with the rest of the international community, but that the biggest concern is that Israel would give us some sort of a heads up about it, because if Israel does strike Iran, then it's likely Iran would strike our forces in the Middle East. But this is the interesting thing. They asked Panetta, and this is during one of the Sunday morning talk shows. I'm reading from an LA Times article from just a few hours ago. Leon Panetta warns Iran to keep Strait of Hormuz open.
He looks like Inspector Clouseau from the Pink Panther.
Oh, you think he does?
Yeah, there's a
picture here on the article, and he thinks he looks like Inspector Clouseau. If you go to the LA Times website, you can find it. But they asked Panetta, they said, is Iran trying to develop a nuclear weapon? No, no, Panetta said. But we know that they're trying to develop a nuclear capability, and that's what concerns us. And our red line, again, he uses that red line terminology, our red line to Iran is do not develop a nuclear weapon.
Or what?
That's a red line for us.
Or what?
Or we're going to do something.
Or I'm going to...
I don't know.
We're
going to buy even less than the nothing that we bought before from... I don't know.
Oh, man.
So they're saying they're going to do something. I have this idea that the way that Obama wants to try to get elected is by doing something about Iran.
Possibly. Because every time he does something that's seemingly American, some right-winger say, you know what, you got to give it to him. So if he goes after Iran, he might win re-election based on that alone. Because enough will say, yeah, you know, you got to give it to him. And then he could, you know, put us under in the second term.
Now, Deborah says, isn't initiation of force necessary to prevent American citizens or companies from trading with Iran? Not that I think sanctions are an act of war, but I wonder about this. And that was the point that I was making. So I think that she probably said that before I did. It is true that we have to prevent our own citizens from trading. Yeah. But I would hope that a government would do that only in the situation where refraining from trade is necessary to prevent a threat to the United States, such that if you actually did trade with these other countries, you were in effect committing treasonous act. Martin says, free trade requires the absence of initiation of force. As long as there's a totalitarian theocracy in Iran, there could be no free trade. That's true, and that's, of course...
Deborah says, if they really make us mad, Obama might unfriend Ahmadinejad on Facebook. I mean...
I love how they talk about one thing that somebody said, I can't remember which of them said it in the debate. He said, we'll never have a American leader bowing to a Saudi king again.
I don't know, Gingrich?
It could have been Gingrich.
Gingrich.
Could have been Romney as well.
No, I think, no, Romney wouldn't say
could
that.
Have been Perry?
Romney's too much of a politician, isn't it?
Derek here does say Strait of Hormuz is in Iranian territory. International law says that nations control 12 miles out. It's 34 at its narrowest point.
They control the world, though. What do you mean? They own the world, I mean, as far as they can.
Well, I mean, they can close it as easily as drinking a glass of water. So. It was Gingrich, says Deborah. Okay, so it was Gingrich.
We both said it. So. Anyway.
Yeah, you got it right. You got one on me. I'm sorry.
All right.
I would have believed it was Gingrich, but unfortunately, I would have also believed.
All this to say as well, so it's fine.
I would have believed it was Romney as well.
No, Romney wouldn't say that.
You don't think he would?
Absolutely not. He's too much of a politician. He wouldn't say that.
He has talked about having American self-defense.
Yeah, but he would probably
bow
down. Romney is Republican Obama. That's what he is. I mean,
right.
He's not as bad, but.
Now, in terms of them being an actual risk, a danger to us, there's a lot of Ron Paul fans who disagree. A, they disagree about the threat of Iran developing a nuclear weapon. And then they think, well, even if Iran did have a nuclear weapon, how is it different from anybody else? And there was an excellent question today,
man,
in the morning debate today.
And what time had a...
And Santorum had a very good answer. And the question to Santorum was, how is Iran having a nuclear weapon any different from Soviet Union having a nuclear weapon? Maybe even Pakistan having a nuclear weapon.
I already said it at that point, but basically he said, and he gave the right answer, because they're suicidal. these people. Yeah. They don't value life.
By the way, Derek has a great comment here in the chat room. He says, if you were giving money to an organized crime syndicate, the police wouldn't be wrong to stop you. Yeah. And that's exactly right, Derek.
This
is the parallel that I see. So I think this whole idea of, you know, you've got sanctions being an act of war or sanctions involving a so-called initiation of force by government against its citizens, you know, because they're preventing free trade, completely wrong. Now, if you are doing sanctions for no good reason, so for example, Mitt Romney talks about imposing sanctions against China because China is doing something weird with their currency.
He goes strong against China, never against the enemy, the actual threat that we're dealing with today, but against China. And it always gets applause if people are like, slap some tariffs on him.
It's because he's a so-called businessman.
Yes.
His whole world is this world of currency and everything else, and the military threat I don't think is as real to him as it is to some of the other people who have dealt with it on a daily basis. So I just reject that whole thing about sanctions. So as long as they're used properly, if they are used in that situation like China, if China wants to manipulate their currency, which is probably China initiating force against its own citizens because it's basically making the fruit of their labor worth less. I mean, that's the way I understand it, because it's making the prices of their goods artificially low so that they could be more competitive. That's how I understand it. I am not a financial expert. This is about the best that I can do.
And Romney and
Richard here says Romney's China obsession is creepy.
Yeah, Romney possibly got into a fight over China physically behind the stage. I'm joking. No, Putzman's always saying China.
And apparently he even spoke Chinese, but we missed it.
We fortunately missed it. Fortunately.
I mean, we could go back and watch it.
I mean,
can
he's running
for
president of China?
I don't know. Poor Huntsman.
Putzman.
I know, but I feel bad for him. And New Hampshire felt bad for him. They really cheered for him against Romney too. But let's get back to the China situation. I would say if you impose some kind of sanctions in that situation, that's wrong, because I don't see what China is doing as an act of war against us. Now, we could decide at a certain point that China poses a threat to us, and then if you are going to trade with China, it's threatening to us.
That's pretty good.
Deborah has a good comment about Santorum, but we're going to get to Santorum in a second. So just finishing that thought on China, I think imposing sanctions against China, unless you did it on the grounds that China posed a military threat to us and so that we need to cut off trade with them in order to stop supporting them. But, I mean, the biggest thing that we're doing to support China, as I've learned from not Mark Levin, but Mark Stein.
Yeah.
The thing that I've learned from Mark Stein is that I think in a few years, the interest on the debt to China is going to pay for their military.
Right.
So we're going to be paying for China's military because of the money that our country has borrowed.
Maybe later.
We'll take our call. We do have a call. We'll take a call before we go into the point about Santorum here. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? Oh, I think that person actually did maybe just want to listen to us. Sometimes people call in when they want to listen, and I think there's an option that they can say they have an actual question. If you do have a question, type in the chat room and let us know. We just tried to answer your call. Okay, so let's talk about Santorum. The question Santorum again was, what's the difference between Iran having a nuclear weapon and Soviet Russia? And Santorum gave an excellent answer, which is that Iran is a theocracy, and it's a theocracy that infringes on the human, you know, the rights of its citizens.
And the afterlife is a great, great value to them.
Yeah, the afterlife is better than this life
more
to them.
Important.
And all these things that he's saying as he's leading up to this, I'm saying, okay, yeah, that's true of your religion too. Yeah, that's true of your religion too. Right? I'm checking off the little boxes in my mind because I think it is true, according to Christianity, that heaven is a lot better than it
heaven.
Is here.
That's
but there is one crucial difference between Christianity and Islam, and Islam says that it is not only permissible, but it is encouraged you to fight jihad and die in the course of doing so in the cause of, you know, fighting for Allah.
Yeah.
And I think that is such a huge difference. That
their kind of martyrdom is, it's a murderous kind of martyrdom. It's not like dying for your, you know, it's actually going out of your way to try to kill others and die in the act and then go to heaven.
Yeah. And Santorum had only a minute to answer, and I thought he put it very well.
He did.
Because he said, look, if you give a nuclear weapon to them, and we say, oh, well, we've got nukes, and our nukes are a deterrent against yours, they are not.
No.
Because they would love to nuke us and then have us nuke them, and then they die and they get killed.
Absolutely.
Fighting for the cause of Allah because they've killed great Satan, or they've gotten rid of the occupiers of Israel, or whatever they've done. It is not a deterrent. Whereas to Russia, our having nuclear weapons was a deterrent. Right. So you had a face-off.
They wanted to live and have power on Earth. They were secular.
I mean, I can't even believe that people would be asking this today.
Right.
When you've got over 10 years since 9/11, when, I mean, I could understand before 9/11 people asking this question, but at 9/11, I thought it was clear that we learned that the normal psychology doesn't apply
right.
to these people.
They
don't
want to
live. If they hijack a plane, it's not because they want to get somewhere.
No.
It's because they want to do
damage.
Well,
they
want
to get somewhere to paradise.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't want to get somewhere here on Earth.
Nope.
Yeah.
They're literally out of this world.
Michael did you guys a service. He put a link to Putzman speaking Chinese in the chat room.
I mean, he's annoying, you know, speaking English. You know what I mean? Forget about Chinese.
But yeah, Dever said Santorum understood the issue with Iran because he too is a theocrat. And it might help him understand more.
Right.
But I think it's just interesting that he didn't do anything to explicitly distance his own religious views from those of the Iranians. So to me, that is a huge difference. You can't just say, oh, well, we live with these nuclear countries. Then he was asked about Pakistan as a follow-up. And he said, oh, well, Pakistan's not a theocracy. And I don't think that was the right answer. I would
no
say
way.
That Pakistan wasn't as much of a theocracy
possibly.
As Iran.
Not as an organized theocracy. You know?
Yeah. And, but, of course, it's in danger of...
But also, you know, however good his answer was, and it was good. I do admit that even it's tough to agree with Santorum. He's so annoying. But he also said, he was the one who said that we are friends with Pakistan because they have nukes, if you recall that. So if Iran gets nukes, he'll be buddies with them? I mean, is that
right.
is that that's his mentality. It's just stupid.
Now we've got spaghettification here saying, but those mine enemies, this is quoting from Luke 19:27 in the King James Bible, but those mine enemies, which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me. So this is a call to violence.
Yep.
At the same time, would they perform that violence purposefully trying to get themselves killed
so that they
can get the 72
virgins? There's something
literally
in the Quran about killing and dying. Literally.
Oh, yeah.
You know, slay and be slain in one passage.
And
the passage is 9-1-1-1.
And there are repeated passages, though, too, that glorify dying in the cause of Allah.
Two-thirds of the Quran.
Martyrdom is huge.
Is obsessed with the infidel and controlling him and killing him.
So I think it's a definitely more extreme case. And, of course, we have the problem that Islam hasn't been reformed, whereas Christianity
has. It can't be reformed.
You
can't reform evil. But.
So there are differences. I agree, though, in fundamentals. If you went back to some of the original text, you're going to find some horrible
belief.
Things there as well.
They believe this is the word of Allah, of God, so
right.
They have to act on it.
So I thought that was a good answer. The upshot is, though, the fact that Christianity might itself, in certain contexts, pose a danger. It did, of course, you know, in the past, the you know Catholicism and everything has. But today, now, is Iran, with the potential of getting a nuclear weapon, a danger? Yes. And my question for Panetta is, how in the world do you know that Iran isn't developing a nuclear weapon right now, especially when you've got the IAEA report? And what I love is when Ron Paul and other people say, oh, they're exaggerating. The IAEA, which is some international liberal self-hating
Absolutely.
Body of people... Who,
that was
anything,
run by a guy named Muhammad, and that's why they picked him.
Well, and then, if anything, I would expect them to tone down the report. And I remember reading news stories in which they said, oh, well, they were trying to figure out politically how much information they can release, which makes me think that they have even more information than what we've seen.
And also to think these kind of weapons have been around for how many years, I mean, decades and decades and decades, to think that they wouldn't want to get their hands on them or that they're not trying. This is their goal for the last 30 years. Think about that culture as well, though. You know, nukes have been around for, you know, again, how many years, and they still have not been able to get their hands on one. That's how inept they are.
And I think recently I've been hearing of various mishaps, quote unquote, in their nuclear program that I believe would be at the hands of Israel or maybe even us. Who knows? We might have some stealth team out there.
I don't know about that.
Obama
has too much respect for Islam and Muslims. He does.
But imagine what a coup it would be for him if he can say, well, not only did I kill Osama bin Laden.
Again.
He
will try to do anything he can to win this next election. And I wrote something the other day. I said, if you ever doubted that he hates the country, his re-election campaign is proof. Why the hell would he want to continue his policies?
Yeah, he's done so much damage.
I mean,
what was the way that you put it? You had put it in a really fun way.
I put it in...
it was something like something part two.
I put hope part two, doubling down.
Doubling down.
It's like a movie poster. And I put it on my blog. Check it out if you can.
Awesome
doubling spot.
I mean, and doubling down is, if anybody has gambled in Vegas, what you can lose in such a situation is horrible. So just to give you more great news about Obama, we do have a questioner, somebody who does want to get in here and talk. This is great. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, are you there? Can you hear us?
I guess not. That's fine.
Well, they hit the little button.
Okay.
As if they wanted to ask a question, and then I didn't hear anything. So
how's it going?
We'll just go on to our next story. What we've got is Obama making what are called preemptive recess appointments, according to Jonathan H. Adler of the Volokh Conspiracy. A lot of people have complained about these recess appointments because the Senate was not literally in recess, right? So what there is a provision in the Constitution that allows for the appointment while, the Senate is in recess. I'm going to read you. This is actually John Yoo had a little piece on this whole abuse of executive power in the corner from National Review Online. And he says, Article 2 of the Constitution grants the president authority, quote, to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session, end quote. Constitution doesn't define exactly what a recess is. So in general, lately they've thought that if you had an adjournment, it would have to be longer than at least 10 days for it to become a recess. And what the Senate has done recently in order to prevent Obama from making these recess appointments is instead they do what are called pro forma meetings, so that they're in a pro forma session, little or no business occurs during it, but they want to prevent Obama from making a so-called recess appointment. So they were in this session of a pro forma session, in effect, and Obama just comes in and blithely makes appointments. And he made appointments of three people to the National Labor Relations Board, and then they appointed someone named Richard Cordray to a new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, because we need a new government bureaucracy.
To protect the people.
So,
from business.
Republicans are fuming about this, and are they going to do something? And then supposedly, there's a bunch of pundits out there that are saying, well, maybe now there'll be talk of impeachment. Well, isn't that talk of impeachment when you start talking? I don't understand.
I
don't understand what actually constitutes talk of impeachment.
I made a cartoon called Outlaw in Chief the other day. That's all.
Yeah, and people are saying that this is definitely unconstitutional. And in fact, in this little piece in the corner, what John Yoo says is, of course, he calls for the Senate and I guess the House, they hold the purse strings to do various things to defund. They can defund the National Labor Relations Board. And I believe that Gingrich and other people have, they've been stumping around campaigning. They've been calling for defunding of the National Labor Relations Board. And in addition, they've called for, and here John Yoo has called for, defunding and repealing legislation, that they could go ahead and pass some legislation that repeals certain aspects of the act that created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Or he says they could refuse to create any laws or regulations or give them any power. There's a lot that they can do to mess up the functionings of these bureaus and boards. And the biggest thing he does, and he does this twice in this piece, and I love it. He says, more importantly, this is how he finishes it off. He says, more importantly, private parties outside government can refuse to obey any regulation issued by the new agency, this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Just refuse to obey the regulation. They will be able to defend themselves in court by claiming that the head of the agency is an unconstitutional officer, and they will have the grounds for a good test case. And then he says they can call Richard Epstein first, me second, for advice. So they're volunteering themselves.
But will people be that principled in general? No, will they actually hold their ground like that? Will they? Or just say, well, you know, it is what it is.
I can imagine some private parties have a test
some
case.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Some would, but in general, I don't know.
I think someone definitely will. I think it would be a lot of fun. And, you know, it's the modern equivalent of Griswold versus Connecticut, which we'll get to talk about a little bit because I think Romney got to be embarrassed about that this week. But that's what you do. If you think that something is unconstitutional, you set up a test case. You behave in such a way that the government comes after you and you get to defend yourself by making the constitutional argument.
If they're informed.
Yeah. So, the thing that's at stake here is not only the fact that I think Senate and maybe the House, too, would like to have helped prevent this Consumer Protection Bureau, Financial Protection Bureau, from getting off the ground, because the more established one of these bureaucracies becomes, the harder it is to eradicate.
Absolutely right.
So I found it interesting, though, that the Senate was purposefully trying to prevent these appointments from taking place. I thought that was interesting because the Senate is led by Democrats.
Yeah, and behind closed doors must be really made pissed because they're putting a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, they must be mad as well. One thing that's interesting, though, is that Harry Reid, I heard, has flip-flopped on his position about this. Politicians tend to have different positions based on who's in power. Mm-hmm. So when Bush was in power and he was like recess appointments, of course Harry Reid was opposed to them, but now that it's the Saint Obama, then everything is fine. So
dingy Harry, as Rush calls him.
So the point is that Obama is trying to just get away with everything that he can. With respect to that bureau, he's just going to go ahead and make his appointment. John Yoo says he doesn't necessarily see a problem substantively with the particular appointment. I have a problem with appointing anybody to any new bureaucracy. This all needs to be stopped, and they should defund the entire thing and get rid of it. The bigger problem are the appointments for the National Labor Relations Board. The thought is that now Obama has ensured that a majority of the board are going to do things like punish Boeing, right? Remember, Boeing decided that it couldn't deal with the union, and so it chose instead to try to open a plant in South Carolina to where it's a right-to-work
Obama
state.
Obama has a good attack dog here to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, so
and that's why he appointed him.
Yeah, so what he's done now is he's gone ahead and appointed three people to the National Labor Relations Board without any oversight at all, no confirmation, and at least tell, you know, if you read the Constitution here, at least tell the end of the next session of Senate, these people get to go in there and make all sorts of rulings. I'm just scared to even know what sort of power the National Labor Relations Board is.
He keeps having a refrain, though, we must do it now. Now, in a minute, he keeps saying that. We can't wait. We can't wait. That's his whole refrain now.
Yeah. Now, Derek here says that Bush made recess appointments too, but A, they were actually during recesses, and B, they weren't appointments that were likely to get rejected anyway. Not that Bush wasn't awful too. Of course, Bush was terrible as well. But the other thing with this is that two of the appointments that Obama made to the National Labor Relations Board, they were nominated only on December 15th. So it's not even like he gave some sort of lead time. It was just before the Senate went into this pro forma session, during which no business was going to be conducted. And also, I think that the Senate's Health, Education, and Labor Committee, which would be in charge, I guess, of, you know, shuttling these appointments around and making sure that all the information was shared with the Senate at large, they had yet to receive the relevant paperwork and background materials on the two nominees. These materials are typically required, in addition to a background check. So the Senate committee, the relevant Senate committee to these appointments, didn't even get the background checks for these people to look at for Senate consideration. So you might say, I mean, you know, Obama's thing is, oh, well, I have to do the American people business, even if Congress is obstructing me. He can't even say anything like that here because he didn't even give the information about these nominees.
This is what dictators do, though.
To the relevant committee.
He just, and he's, yeah, I mean, he's a frustrated dictator who's finally now in his own mind said, well, I can get this. And let me push it. And what are they going to do anyway? He looks at John Boehner and says, what the hell?
Yeah, and so this is why Jonathan Adler in this little short piece on the Volokh conspiracy, it was published on the 6th of January. That's why he called it preemptive. Because and I would say this is preemptive in a completely unjustified way because you might say, oh, well, I have a perfectly good and qualified person and the Senate is just delaying the confirmation for political reasons. He might, you know, Obama might be able to say that about one of them because there was a Republican who was Terry Flynn who had been nominated last January and he was appointed as one of the three here. But two of them hadn't had any review whatsoever.
Well, he was only in there just for that, though. He was only in there. He meant to say it's a Republican in there now. That's the reason why, I mean, this guy.
Look, I gave you a Republican on there.
You can't put anything past this.
And the Republican label doesn't mean anything anymore.
No, of course. Of course it doesn't. I mean, look at it. Look at Boehner, the crier of the House. What the hell?
Bloomberg calls himself, right?
Oh, he calls himself a Republican. Big government lib.
Derek says, I can't wait for the rule of law. Me neither. And he just doesn't follow it. And he has this pretense of, you know, he's going out there and he's just doing the things that need to get done. And the counter argument that is given that Adler talks about in the Volokh conspiracy blog is he says that the National Labor Relations Board, which governs all the issues of union relations over which it has power, which, like I said, I'm scared to even know the extent of the power that the National Labor Relations Board has. They didn't have a quorum. So if they don't have a quorum, they can't do business. They can't do anything. Oh, poor them. It's such a sob story. So, of course, he had to make these recess appointments because otherwise they wouldn't have a quorum and they couldn't get anything done as they talked about.
He probably promised them they'll do it and he has to live up to that promise. So, you know, because, you know, when a liar always lies, it's like, anyway.
So what do you think? I mean, do you think that they should start impeachment proceedings? I think they should add this to a number of other things that Obama has done. And why not start an impeachment proceeding? Because I can tell you, first of all, we don't know for sure that this is going to be his only term because we don't know what kind of tricks he has up his sleeve. We don't know whether whichever candidate comes through the wash and all of this GOP primary business, whether that person's actually going to be able to stand up against Obama and do a good job. So we're not sure about that. But what I am sure about is that even if Obama is a one-term president, that I am nervous about the damage he would do between the time that he was voted out and the time that he actually left. Imagine the pardon.
Scorched earth. He would tear it up as much as he possibly could, as much damage as he could. That would be irreparable, possibly. I mean, that would be his goal. Out of rage, the fact that he can't continue in power.
Well, and of course, Michelle Obama would say that she's not proud of her country anymore, so who knows what we could expect.
He might move to Iran, though. That'll be good. I mean, you know?
I don't know. So I would rather, but I guess what, if he's impeached, then immediately that day, anything that would become,
as far as
nothing would be effective after that day. So that would be the only way to make sure that.
He'd be powerless.
Yeah.
The fact is, do the Republicans have, they have all the backup, do they have the balls to actually do it?
Now, does anybody have an opinion here? People are still talking about the issues of Christians versus Muslims, I think. Some people saying, good evening, hello, and, oh, Gary Johnson. We're not even talking about Gary Johnson. I think someone just joined us.
Wait, God Johnson? What?
Yeah, God Johnson. Oh, I don't know about Gary Johnson. I don't think he's strong enough to fight Obama.
When he had an opportunity, he didn't take it.
And he's not going to have the backing to fight Obama. I don't even think that Ron Paul, who is wildly popular as a potential third-party candidate, I don't think he can do it.
No. I mean, we know they'll have everything against him, the media, everything. They'll try to make him look as bad as they possibly can. You need someone good.
And there's another thing, too, right? The reason that we have the politicians we do because we have the culture that we have.
Huh?
So I just don't see that you're going to get even halfway towards an objectivist in the next couple elections even. All you can hope for is to get a little bit better, a little bit better. And then the wild card, though, was how did we get Reagan right after we got Carter? And why isn't there somebody who's
because he was individual.
At least that good now?
Yeah, he was individual. I mean, I just, you know, you can't account for that. You need a great, strong individual to come along and change things.
I think,
don't have it right now.
I think the other thing, too, is that the media has been very entrenched with a lot of liberals, too, and I think within the Republican Party leadership, there's
although,
a lot
also
more
Republicans, they want to show their liberal bona fides. They want to pretend that, look, you could like me, too. I'm pretty liberal on some issues. I mean, Romney himself has referred himself as a progressive a decade ago.
So impeach or not impeach, people? What do you think? Should they go for impeachment? Will they go for impeachment? I doubt that they will. What do you think, Bob?
I doubt it. They have not shown any strength. Nothing.
I mean,
they're hoping that they'll get the White House, and that's it. And they're like, okay.
You would say that if you add this, appointing these anti-business people to the National Labor Relations Board. Right. Obamacare itself. I think he's refusing to sign the legislation that's going to allow the Keystone Pipeline to create a bunch of jobs.
He's speaking with our sworn enemies, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, he's conducting these secret negotiations with the Taliban.
Like,
there's all kinds of things
like,
they could throw in
like
there.
Like dealing with Nazis. I mean, that's what it is.
Robert in New York says impeach for sure. It would be great.
No, of course we want them to. This Appleton seems like a real wise guy. Came on here, impeach on what grounds? Muslims can take the Quran as they choose. So it's probably a punk who doesn't belong here coming on here.
Okay, sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Sounds exciting. So,
what a name.
You know, a lot of people are saying that these appointments are unconstitutional. If they are unconstitutional, shouldn't that be the grounds to go ahead and do something? You know, one thing that's interesting is Obama's making this argument that he could go ahead and decide what is and isn't a recess. And John Yoo makes a very powerful argument. Is the president going to have the authority to decide if the Supreme Court has deliberated too little on a case? No, you leave that up to the Supreme Court. We have a separation of powers. Similarly, you should allow the Senate to determine when it is and is not in session, and then you should follow the precedent that's under the Constitution and the litigation that has followed in terms of interpreting the Constitution. All of that needs to be respected. And Obama seems to respect none of this. If he's done something unconstitutional, clearly he should face impeachment. He has sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution. It's an interesting argument. I don't think that anything's going to happen, and the news cycle is so short. Who's going to actually ride them and make them do it? The only thing that might have influence is because we've got Republican candidates all out there stumping week after week after week now because of the primary season, calling for various sorts of actions. The types of actions that I think are being called for, though, by the candidates are things like defunding National Labor Relations Board or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and things like that. And then Chris says, so impeach Obama and replace with whom? Oh, can you imagine? So if you impeached Obama, right, would we then have our wonderful vice president?
I don't know about that because
who I haven't seen.
Isn't the administration poison at that point? Isn't it? I mean, if you impeach him, don't you impeach him?
When was the last time that you saw Biden, by the way?
I don't know. Who is Joe Biden?
I mean,
you're right.
I haven't seen him for so long.
I think they want him out of the way because he's just too embarrassing. I think so.
I don't think I've seen him since.
Haven't heard him or seen him. It's true.
Did those ceremonies commemorating the anniversary of 9/11?
And he blew it. He blew the dates. He blew the numbers.
He blew some stuff. He definitely did. So maybe we'd have him. How terrible would that be? I guess he wouldn't probably try to do anything purposely to destroy the country. So that would be something. I don't know. I'm not impressed. And like I said, this really shows how important it is to get Obama out on the one hand. The other thing it shows is that I should be nervous if we do vote him out, what he's going to do when he's a sitting down president.
But the fact is, we got to get him out regardless, either through impeachment or through next election.
Right.
And he has to get out. I mean, he's a poison. He's
Now, what have we got here? Yeah. Impeachment is normally never possible. That's why he's asking why. Well, you can start impeachment proceedings.
Of course.
And you're not necessarily going to succeed. You have to have some grounds for doing it. And then the question is, do they have enough grounds to do it?
I mean, you know, the way I see it is this. I mean, look what I said it before, but look what we're seeing from Obama publicly. Imagine what he's doing behind closed doors. That's the scary thing. And we just got to find out what that is. They got to do some heavy, hardcore investigation.
Let's see. U.S. political science professor here says Derek is saying that the "we can't wait" stuff scares him because it's a veiled threat against the separation of powers.
Right.
Yes, and that's
right.
Exactly the sort of thing that John Yoo is saying. John Yoo is saying,
wait.
If you make this analogous argument that, you know, Obama says, well, I'm going to do what I can without Congress, then it's very bad. It's very ominous because you're going to say, oh, well, you know, you're going to judge whether the Supreme Court's doing its job and so on. We do have a call, so we're going to go ahead and take it. Oh, I have a couple calls. Hi, you're on the line. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Amy. Can you hear me?
Is this Deborah? Hi.
Hey, Deborah.
Yes, hello. Yeah, they definitely should impeach him, but I don't think they will. I mean, I can just hardly imagine Boehner taking a stand on anything. I mean, the only time he exhibits the spine is when he's trying to beat down some Republican.
Oh, yeah.
And get the Republican to vote for some kind of, you know, spending or increase or something like that that goes along with Obama's agenda. So I don't think it's going to happen. But it would be, even if we ended up with Biden, you know, I don't know how all that works. Like, I know one of you, I think it was Bosch, you were saying that wouldn't that just sort of render the whole administration impotent? Maybe it does. I don't know. But even if it did leave us with Biden, just in the name of justice, someone needs to impeach him, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I for one, am desperately starved to see some justice in the political arena.
Absolutely.
And I think that a lot of other people are, too.
But
so even if we end up...
They're not ready. They're not ready for the Tea Party and what they stand for. They're not. I mean, last election, 2010, they really, you know, took it to them, and they haven't done anything about it.
Yeah, the Republicans have tried to marginalize the
Completely.
Tea Party. And even, you know, Paul Ryan, his plan that he put forth for help, you know, starting the phase out of the entitlement programs and all that stuff, it's being called radical by your establishment Republicans. And his plan, as I understand it, is pretty tame as well. So have you even heard any rumblings from actual politicians about starting impeachment proceedings? Because all I've heard is commentators saying, well, maybe they'll start talking about impeachment, whatever that means.
You know, I don't think that I have heard anyone say that about Obama. I've heard that there are some people in the House saying that they want to impeach Eric Holder because of this
right.
fast and furious
right.
thing.
Right.
But I
right.
don't know. I might have heard someone say something like briefly, but I'm not even sure I did. The only thing I'm sure I've heard is them talking about impeaching Holder. But, yeah, the establishment Republicans, I'm kind of starting to think that that the Republican Party has three factions right now. There's the establishment ones like Boehner, who are never going to do anything because they're basically just pragmatists, and they sort of they're just watered down versions of the Democrats.
If Obama makes him cry, he might go for impeachment.
That's
Maybe
right.
He might.
Exactly.
So you know what? That's it.
So,
and his mascara will run, you know.
So Boehner's the establishment, and then what? You've got the theocrats as well, right?
Yeah, you got like the evangelicals, and then you've got the sort of more libertarian-ish, small L libertarian, you know, the Tea Party types.
Right.
And unfortunately, I think that third section isn't really very powerful yet, not enough to really do anything. Because I think that maybe if they were all of that sort, that someone would probably start impeachment proceedings against Obama. I know I would. If I were Speaker of the House, Obama would
Absolutely.
Be out of there by now.
We've got some funny people making some jokes in the chat room here. We've got Derek, who said that Boehner would impeach Obama only if Obama cheated at golf, which I like. Chris is here too, and he says, didn't Boehner almost launch impeachment hearings after Obama established the tanning tax? So that would be. Oh, and actually, Robert from New York is giving us a little website link here, impeachobamacampaign.com. Uh-huh. That's probably private citizens who are trying to...
I think it's been up there since 2008, I think. Yeah. Like 2008.
I think ever since they started doing Obamacare, there's got to be something also in the way that Obamacare was
he's
passed.
He's got away with murder.
That they could...
And he has to pay for it.
Get in somehow as well as part of an impeachment proceeding. I think Holder, they want to impeach him too because of this ID thing, though, right? He's been going after states
a few things, right.
Who are making IDs a requirement to vote. Isn't that right?
And also the FASA jurors and letting the Black Panthers get away with it, with that voter intimidation.
So, Deborah, you're skeptical that they're going to do anything, huh?
No, I mean, I'm not even skeptical. I'm like 99% sure they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
I wish they would. I desperately wish they would. But Boehner is just such a jellyfish. I mean, he's I think that if Obama were a Republican, Boehner would be more likely to impeach
right.
him.
Right. I think you're right.
I think that's true. Now, I like this idea, though, that John Yoo has about just refusing to obey any of the regulations or whatever it is, the horrible stuff that's going to come out of this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, we just refuse. And then we create a test case, and then we can go ahead and do the work that our elected officials are refusing to do. You do it in court through litigation. Now, if Obama continues to appoint judges and justices, it's going to be hard to get it done. We'll see, how these cases fare when we see how Obamacare does. I heard that the Department of Justice just filed its brief in support of the individual mandate recently, so we're going to have to take a look at that and see what sorts of arguments. I'm sure it's going to be the same kind of arguments that we've seen before. Deborah, anything else before we let you go? We've got another caller we're going to go ahead and take.
Nope, that's it.
Okay, thanks.
Take care,
we'll talk more maybe in the next hour. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Am I on the air?
You are. Who is this?
Oh, hi. It's Ben.
I thought I recognized your voice, but I wanted to let you tell us.
Okay.
How are you?
Okay. Happy New Year to you, too.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
What do you think of this mess, Batten?
Please. I just wanted to give you a history reminder about the Carter years, as opposed to right now, where we are. You can remember, I can remember the Democrats they established a Dump Carter movement. Mm-hmm. And I can remember a lot of prominent politicians getting on the phones to raise money for this. And Ted Kennedy was looking to challenge Carter.
Right.
I see none of that now.
Okay.
And obviously, there's no Reagan on the horizon to get people excited. But the biggest thing is with Carter, as horrible as he was, and Obama is even more horrible, there was no opportunity to use racism to buffer anything with Carter. And I think they are going to not only play the race card, it's going to go into full drive.
It will.
And I think that's why people have been a little, chicken to really go after Holder. Because, he started making noise about that it's his race that people are picking on, not his
policies.
Record as Attorney General. So... we're up against all this stuff. I mean, I'm afraid. I mean, I can't even look at the debates. They're so cringeworthy. But
they're tough to watch.
I think impeachment might be the only way to get Obama out, because when I hear Romney on talk shows, I don't know if he can if he's got the fire to really cut Obama down to size at the debates.
I don't think so either. And he also has like scared eyes if you see him. I mean, he really does. They're like going left and right, and he's like, damn, can you just say something honest and straight once?
Well, and they've also gotten him in some pretty sticky stuff in the last couple debates.
Yeah, I mean, he has Romney care. That's the albatross. I mean,
we could talk about that in a minute. I don't. So you didn't watch either of the two debates last night, Batten?
No, I get the capsule on the blogs where I watch highlights.
Basically, it's a lot of the same, except for they are now coming out of their shells a little bit more.
Yeah, a little more aggressive.
Especially Santorum. Ever since he's been buoyed by this victory in the Iowa caucus, is showing more of his true stripes, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
So it's just depressing that this is the field we have. But so you think impeachment. So if there is impeachment, then I don't know if Biden would be kicked out too, or we'd end up with a Biden, or actually
no. A Biden would move in if he's still vice president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more thing I wanted to add. You cannot underestimate Alfila's leader. There was rumors, I don't know if you caught it, that Biden and Hillary might switch places.
I heard about that.
Yeah, I heard about that. And at first I heard that Hillary might run against Obama, but then maybe I guess Obama did something to say, hey, maybe you'll just be my running mate instead and not interfere with my grand plan to destroy the United States. Of course, then there'll be nothing left for Hillary to raid after Obama's done with it.
Right.
So I don't know what she thinks she's getting out of that deal.
Or maybe she's going to try to
impeach him. I'm sorry. The theory, and it rings true to me, is that they're hoping for another the Democrats are hoping for another Reagan Bush, like what would be 12 years of Democrat rule, because they would be hoping the liberals would vote for Hillary when she runs for president after being vice president. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare scenario.
I mean, it is. I don't know if it gets worse. I don't know if it's been worse.
It really is, because then I think you do have the complete looting and destruction of everything. If you have first an Obama administration, after this a second Obama administration, and then one or two Clinton administrations under Hillary Clinton.
But I don't
understand how they think that they can do anything. I mean, there's no money left. It's done. It's gone. It's kaput.
But I think you're right, Amy. But by the time they may think that Hillary would be able to run for president, but there'll be nothing left, and people would be just so disgusted. Anyone to the right of Obama would become president.
Right.
Now, which of the current field do you think could best beat Obama? So you're actually skeptical about Romney. A lot of people have thought that Romney has the best chance. And the theory that I read today, which seems plausible, is that Romney has the best chance because he is the least explicitly theocratic, in nature, and so he's not going to alienate the independent voters
as much as the other one. He's the most like the guy who won the last presidency, Obama. I mean, in that sense, where it's a real smooth transition, which is why Jimmy Carter said he wouldn't mind seeing Romney. Jimmy Carter.
Who do you think, Batten?
Probably Romney would be the best, because once they started getting into the social issues, I began to go cross-eyed. And you notice Romney kind of keeps away from that.
He does.
Yeah, he really tries to stick out.
He's
and I loved
I mean,
it. They,
well, he's a Democrat, so
they,
he stayed away from that.
They had to pry out of him. They had to pry out of him today that he wanted to actually reverse Roe versus Wade.
Right.
He tried to avoid answering that question. And then moreover, it was so funny. He said, gosh, I can't imagine any state wanting to ban contraception.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, 1960s Griswold versus Connecticut. Do you know any history at all? I don't know. It's in his mind. He just couldn't even imagine that a state would want to do this and say, okay, President Romney, wake up, because you would have the religious right pressuring you to further their agenda. I actually think he's only sort of mouthing agreement with a lot of the religious right agenda, but
He has learned to speak Republican.
Is there any there for Romney? I mean, is there?
Well, he is whatever he has to be in order to get the power.
Bosch is right. I mean, it's hard for me to get excited because, I mean, I'm convinced most conservatives, they don't care about people's sexual orientation. They care about the welfare of their family and if the money's going to be there when they retire. I can't tell you how many conservatives, young and old, in my life that I have met that didn't care if someone was gay, someone was going to get married, for this constant dwelling on this.
I think the politician thinks that we care. I think they think we really care, and that's why
you're
pushing it. Yeah, it's not that we do.
Well, and I think that when the liberal networks host the debates, that they love to get them just talking about these issues.
Like
because
the constipated Diane Sawyer. I don't know if you saw her.
Diane Sawyer she was so annoying last night.
One guy had a great description. He said the look on her face is as if she's about to be pounded on the back with a baseball bat. She has squinty eyes, and she looks like she's constipated.
I don't know why anyone would fall into the trap of letting George Stephanopoulos moderate these things, because it's clear what camp he's in. I don't care what he says. It's so obvious. It's insulting to the viewers.
It is. It's up to leftists, I mean, asking these guys. And, you know, when Savage calls him George Step on All of Us. It's hilarious.
Right.
Well, they should just start every debate with, so when did each of you stop beating your wife?
That's right.
Right.
I mean, just get it over with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Be honest.
And they'll, you know, purposefully, well, actually one funny moment was they were talking about the gay marriage issue, and then they bring the question to Rick Santorum, and Santorum says, oh, you know, imagine that you're coming to me with this question, you know, because everybody knows that the question's coming to him. He said he knew the question's coming to him, and then he asked the guy to repeat the question. It was priceless.
Right.
It was the funniest thing. And, you know, of course, he's against, you know, any sort of gay marriage, and he's also against any adoption right for homosexual couples, which I believe Romney, he would allow adoption for homosexual couples, from what I understood from him. I mean, you know, it's so hard in these short debates to get the different views out. But I think if that's a difference that makes a difference for people, even though Romney says he's against marriage for homosexuals, I think in every other thing he thinks that there should be equal rights, including adoption.
But everything he says lacks conviction, so you don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't.
Well, I just wish one of them would bring up that the president – agrees with them about gay marriage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting.
Come on, guys.
You know Reagan would have said that.
Yes, and the moderators would never bring it up. So it's their job to bring it up. And they didn't.
Well, and the other thing, I think with Romney, there was one point in the debate today where they were discussing, and you know how they do, they ask all the other people, do you think Romney is electable? Can he beat Obama? And then Romney was called on to defend himself. And he was talking about an issue, and I can't remember what it was, but it was an issue that applied only to New Hampshire in particular. So you could tell that in his mind he's thinking about only just the next one. Now,
absolutely,
some people think that that's a good winning strategy where you say, okay,
I think
about winning the next step. But if somebody explicitly asks you a question about the far distant future in which you're going to be facing Obama as your opponent, then you need to answer that question and not be – still stuck in your little myopic, okay, I'm waiting about, you know, the New Hampshire primary. So, I mean, whatever that reveals about Romney.
One about
him,
I mean, you
decide.
Know he wants to be president. He wants power. Because in the way he moves, in the way he speaks so quickly also. And he doesn't speak articulately. I mean, he's really bad.
Well, and he lists 12 things that you can't absorb in one.
No, you can't. That's
answer.
Why he does. He goes and bombard them. You know.
Everything from the way he looks to the way he speaks, he is a politician from central casting.
He is. He's terrible.
Okay,
what's
the final word, Batten? Are we going to be depressed and cry or what?
Like Boehner?
Well, I think it's going to get so bad. Even atheists are going to turn to religion. Because I'm joking about that.
Thank you, Batten.
We'll see. Anything can happen. This is still only the second week. So my experience in life has always been when things look pretty grim, somehow something, some sort of miracle, for lack of a better word, happens. So we'll check in next month and see if things get better.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Bat, and we'll
talk. Alrighty, good luck.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Now, we actually have a third call here that we're going to go ahead and take. Hello, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hello, this is Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, Robert.
Yes, I was going to say, in regards to the Republicans, as I recall, when Ronald Reagan got the nomination, he did impose the 11th Commandment, which I don't see that happening in these leaders currently.
I know,
it's amazing at Obama how he kind of instigates this fighting amongst them in his comments, let them fight it out, so forth. And this is very good, falls right into his lap. There's a lot of psychological warfare going on, I think, within the people, and he just feeds on it. It's just disgusting.
Now, who would be your choice and why from among this field?
Well, you know, looking at the candidates, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Look at the candidates, and I'm not really sure right now, but the one that I find the most honest as far as character goes is Santorum. I think he's
true.
A good, wholesome man, whether he's Christian, that's his belief system. Either way, I find him as a very good, common sense man who is conservative to a point in his economics. And I consider him the best candidate as far as wholesomeness goes. He comes across as the most wholesome out of all the candidates, I think.
For me, there's been a few red flags with respect to Santorum. I like a lot of what he has to say about foreign policy. And I don't know if you were listening the last hour. I was talking about what he said in that answer about Iran having a nuclear weapon versus Soviet Russia. He really understands the danger of Islam as a motivation for a theocracy like
say
Iran.
That, yes.
Yeah, so he's excellent there. One thing that bothers me is he talks about trying to revive manufacturing.
Oh, yeah, coming through on my phone.
Oh, you can't hear me. So he's talking about
revive.
Can you hear me okay now?
I'll try again.
Okay. He's talking about reviving manufacturing.
See, I'm not getting you on my receiver.
Then go ahead and say what you want about Santorum and just in about a minute or so, and then I'll go ahead and answer you off air.
Okay. Well, Santorum, I don't know much about him. I know he is a wholesome person. He is a Christian. So many Christians are good people, as we know. They might not have the right philosophical premises, whatever. But anyway, I like him as a person. And the other ones are just too vicious in their makeup. And I think he is the most, the most thorough in his honesty. And I think he's a possibility.
Okay. Well, I think here in California, I'm not going to have a chance to vote for him because he probably would not have a chance of winning in a state like California, but it could be interesting. That's a good perspective. I'm going to go ahead and tell you about my reservations about him off air, and feel free to participate in the chat too, okay? Thanks for calling in, Robert. Okay, so in terms of Santorum, I have reservations about the fact that he talks about encouraging certain sectors of the economy, like manufacturing. So there's that issue. So he's talking about probably instituting certain sorts of incentives and things to push success within a certain sector of the economy. And right now, more than ever, what we just need to do is we need to have the government get out of the way, repeal regulations as much as possible. And this is actually why I think when Perry talks about having a part-time Congress, I think that's a wonderful idea, but we can't do that anytime soon, not for the foreseeable future, because suppose they have the right ideas. They come in there with the right ideas. They have so much work to do with peeling back the layers of the onion, all of these regulations that have been built up year after year after year. They have to plan methodically how to peel them back, get them away, out of our way, so that the economy can start growing again. They talk about passing laws and whether a law is going to create jobs or not. All you need to do is, does this law represent an increase in freedom so that people can make their own decisions and plan their own lives and spend their own money the way that they want? Or is it in the other direction? And it's not, does legislation create jobs? It doesn't. So we just need to get out of the way. Manufacturing may or may not be the right place for Americans to be investing their money right now. Who knows? I don't know whether that's true. It might thrive. Certainly everything will thrive better than it is now if we go ahead and repeal some of this. So it concerns me if he is playing favorites with respect to certain sectors of the economy. We don't need that kind of thinking right now. Similar is Huntsman. Huntsman talks about breaking up, what was the monopoly
wait,
that he
wanted?
Besides
China, he speaks about something else?
Yeah, he talks about something else. He wanted to break up a supposed monopoly with respect to the distribution of oil.
Yeah,
but
right.
He seemed to be confusing two things when I heard this very brief answer in the debate. He seemed to be confusing oil itself, the distribution of that commodity. Also, he might have been mixing that with the idea that he wants alternative energy sources to be supported. And I'm sorry, I don't want government trying to pick winners and losers, as they call it. I don't want government trying to push, either through tax loopholes or whatever, subsidies, forget it, any particular type of technology, just get out of the way and let things happen the way they're going to happen. So when Santorum, and he's brought this up in a few debates, he talks about reviving manufacturing. I don't know if manufacturing is the right thing. I'm no expert, but what I do know is that if government's going to come in there and try to encourage through use of force,
also, you know, if he's locked into that attitude, he's going to try to do something about that, even if it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, that's like his issue, like China, you know, putting sanctions on China is the Romney issue. That concerns me about Santorum.
Deal with reality, deal with it as it is, with the most important issues, and that they're not talking about that. Gingrich seems to be talking about that at times. He does, a little more than the other guys.
And then similarly, the other thing, of course, that discourages me about Santorum, worries me about him, is his social issues agenda.
He makes it, it's important as hell to him.
Hugely important to him.
Spills over.
I think it would hurt him if he's running against Obama, and I think it would properly hurt him if he's running against Obama, because I think the American people, when they see somebody coming in there and saying, we're going to social engineer you, his focus in the social issues realm is the family.
Right.
And he'll cite the research from the Brookings Institution.
And what can he do as president about that? I mean, what can he do?
Who knows what he would
try? I want to make the family
to,
stronger. What does that mean?
You must get married.
Anybody
who knows Anthem and things about – actually, Anthem is wrong, though. They had this thing where it wasn't really families. I'm not going to reveal anything. But Ayn Rand's Anthem had a bit of social engineering in it where they told you basically how certain things were going to happen in your life in this dystopia.
Because you will get married, you'll have 10 kids.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, what are you going to do as president? I mean, really, what could you do?
I don't know. So those...
How about doing your job?
Those things make me nervous. I do sort of agree. He has this sort of earnest, honest, young boy kind of thing about him. Do you agree about that,
Bosch? Yeah, I mean, when he was talking about Iran, it was the best thing said about Iran. Yeah, and it was. Mm-hmm. And him and Gingrich are the two best on the foreign policy issue.
Robert brings up the very important point. Santorum is probably the only one who would lose to Obama, as he's too much of an obvious theocrat.
He can't hide it.
Yes, yeah. And I just think that's true. I think fortunately for the Republicans right now, because really their job is to pick somebody who's going to beat Obama. Sorry, I think that is their job right now.
It is. We got to get rid of this guy.
And you know, because if they pick somebody who is great but can't beat Obama at all, then that's no good. But you know, really, they're going to pick somebody. If they pick somebody great in their eyes, it is going to be a theocrat like Santorum.
Not so well.
Santorum is coming out of his shell.
Yeah, a little
ever,
more.
Ever since Iowa. So the other thing that bothered me, and people saw these interviews being passed around online this week, there are interviews in which he explicitly denounces individualism.
Yes,
and the pursuit of happiness. He talks about pursuing happiness as being
and
bad.
And he was whiny about it. He was bitching about it. It was like, oh.
And you know, in the debate today, I think it was, there was a mention of, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And I wish that they had thrown that at Santorum, because
Putzman said that.
It was Putzman. Putzman sounded good sometimes.
Sometimes he did.
Like I said, he's bad too, because I think he would try to push alternative energy. And he has talked about so-called right-sizing companies.
Right.
That if they're too big to fail, maybe they're too big, so we will right-size them, which of course implies government's going to come in and use force to make them smaller.
The national language. You know, he wants to make.
He's not going to make Chinese the national language. So if we go down, you know, the list of the candidates, right? Okay, so there's Gary Johnson, who has the best positions of any of them.
Yes, but he's the weakest candidate.
But he's the weakest, and I don't think he has any chance. I mean, I don't think he can survive this meat grinder of politics right now, because I think in our culture and in the establishment of the people who are going to get these people elected, it's too soon.
The idea that he holds, he needs to be stronger about them, and he isn't. When he had opportunity, he blew it.
I mean, I'd like to be surprised. I'd like to see what Gary Johnson's maybe going to have a test in New Hampshire this week, right?
I don't know, but he's still in. He's still vying for
it. He has actually put
Someone
a lot.
Someone said that he just dropped out. I don't know. I haven't heard
Johnson
that.
Dropped out?
I
well,
haven't heard
he
that.
Dropped out of the Republicans.
Yes,
he's
yes,
running as
right.
a Libertarian,
right?
Right.
Right.
So, I guess, of course, he would get the Libertarian nomination. I don't know anybody else
would.
Do you?
I mean, Ron Paul would get it.
Well, I guess if Ron Paul runs against him, I don't know. And Ron Paul has to know that it's suicide for the American public if he runs as a Libertarian, because he's taking votes away from whoever. Okay, so let's go down. So Gary Johnson, he's out of the Republicans anyway. So if we choose among the Republicans, Huntsman, I don't like Huntsman because I think he is too liberal.
Absolutely. And
he's been doing poorly anyway. He doesn't have any chance, I don't think, of winning against Obama.
He's kind of a retail politician. You look at him, you hear him, oof, it's tough. Tough to watch. Tough to listen to.
He talks about job creation and this and that, but when I hear him talk about concrete things like right-sizing companies or breaking up the oil distribution monopoly, he's talking about using force to manipulate the economy.
Yes.
This is completely the wrong sorts of language. The only thing that he's been good for in the debates is countering Romney's stupid China garbage.
Right.
So there's that.
Well, he'll defend China to the death. Putzman.
Right.
Anyway.
So then there's also Rick Perry. Rick Perry, he keeps portraying himself as an outsider.
Right.
And that always...
He speaks like an outsider.
He does. It sounds attractive, but like I said, I think he's completely unrealistic when he talks about making Congress into part-time, because these guys have way too much work to do in repealing this huge overgrown state. It will It'll take full time for decades
to effectively,
properly repeal this. Nobody's omniscient, but it should be done with some sort of plan in advance. And that's one thing that worries me a little bit about Ron Paul, is that he might try to come in and go roughshod. But so let's go ahead and talk about Ron Paul. We've talked before about the fact that his foreign policy worries me. Biggest thing, they didn't ask him about it today. I was surprised.
Sorry, his foreign policy is exactly what the enemy would like. His foreign policy is the same exact foreign policy the enemy would like us to have, period. I mean, that's it. It is totally appeasing. You know, his whole thing, Paul, is like, our enemies have nothing to do with their war against us. It's all us. Anyway.
Yeah. And his policy is bad. His foreign policy is bad. He is wrong about Iran.
Dead wrong.
And I wished that they would have asked him about what Santorum said about Iran. That would have been excellent. I would have liked to hear him respond. He does apparently equate Iran with anybody else. He thinks that Iran, that their stated belief in this religion of Islam has no effect on their policy.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I've heard from Ron Paul supporters is, there's a video out there where they show Ahmadinejad speaking to these people that have said death to America, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody says back to me and they say, well, Ahmadinejad, he doesn't really have any real power.
Unbelievable.
Now, I don't know how much power he has, but what I
do
know...
The mullahs are in control, but he's their guy.
Well, exactly. If Ahmadinejad has those ideas and says those things, and he's appointed by the people who have the power.
Yes, and if they have,
presumably he's saying things in line with what they say. So I think that's
a
stupid
argument. It's just terrible. It's the trade principle in their mind. If we trade with them, they will stop killing us. It's insane.
Yeah. So, with Ron Paul, there's that. And I think another good thing that Santorum said today, this is another excellent thing that he said.
It was good.
He said that everybody likes Ron Paul's
economic
issues, the fact that he is going to cut so much in terms of government. I think there's five different agencies that he wants to cut, and $1 trillion, and it sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with that. I love watching his commercials, you know, or maybe his PAC, whoever is doing these commercials, you know, $1 trillion gone. Boom, boom. You know, there's like, there's a, you know, explosions, like, you know, exploding the Department of Education and EPA and all these.
Great commercials.
Just gone. Love it, right? But if you look at his track record in terms of being able to get any of his proposed legislation passed, I think they said that only 4 pieces of his legislation in his history have come to the floor and only one has passed.
Yeah.
So what Rick Santorum made the point, he said, all the stuff that we like about him, he won't be able to get it done. And the stuff that we're worried about, which is foreign policy, he'll be able to do it right away because he's commander in chief. So he would, you know, we would vote for him.
I didn't think Santorum had it in him to make that point, but it was a great point.
It's an excellent point. It's a really excellent point. So as much as you say, okay, well, I love Ron Paul's domestic agenda, you've got Stu Boehner as the Speaker of the House, right?
Poor
Boehner. I'm sorry. If you ever listen to my show, John Boehner, it's not that I think you're stupid.
We met John Boehner.
We,
and his skin is
we
orange.
We think you're too weak. Sorry about that. And we don't like your suntan either.
No, he cries.
There's too much crying. And smoking. You shouldn't be smoking.
No, you shouldn't smoke.
So I think that that's true. So I think that Ron Paul, not only is he troubling because I don't know exactly what his plan is and his full understanding. He, by the way, said some of the best stuff in the debate this morning. He was the only one who talked about the fact that government is force, that when government comes in and does stuff, it is
individual
using
liberty,
force to take about money and redistribute it. So he was excellent. I'm going to make Boehner cry, says Deborah. That should only be true that I have
hold on. Derek says Boehner the Rainer. I like that.
Boehner.
By the way, check out this one cartoon. If you haven't, it's called Bane and Boehner on my blog. Check it out.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun because the eyes are, just priceless. So, okay, we talked a little bit about Perry. Perry has that 10th Amendment stuff, too, that bothers me with him.
Yeah.
He basically says, oh, yeah, well, federal government shouldn't be doing this. And he's unrealistic, right? Like I said, he's unrealistic if he has this idea that you're going to have a part-time Congress. And
he's weak on Islam.
And his answer, like also I think that Romney likes to do this, and I think to some extent Santorum likes to do this too, they like to punt the difficult questions about what the proper function of government is by saying, oh, well, the states can do that. You know, I put a joke out on Twitter that Romney, when Ron Paul today was talking about the redistribution of wealth and how this was government force taking the money from some people and giving it to others, which is excellent point by Ron Paul. Then they go to Romney to talk about this. And Romney, if you can sift through all of his verbiage, what Romney essentially said was that I like the redistribution of wealth only, and this is how I said it in Twitter, I said, we want to give it a liposuction and cosmetic surgery.
That's right.
And what I meant by that is liposuction, he says he wants to make it more efficient,
right?
He wants to cut out the fat, cut out the corruption.
No.
So that's the liposuction.
He has no problem with it. I mean, he has no fundamental problem
with it. And that's Gingrich, too. Gingrich, he just wants to basically give big government liposuction. That's all he wants to do. And
Not himself. Just government. He should do it himself. But.
Just the big government. So, the liposuction.
Right.
And then the cosmetic surgery that Romney was talking about for these redistribution programs, they always talk about, quote, block granting to the states.
Right.
So that, they have different needs to redistribute wealth in Idaho than they do Missouri or whatever, you know. Who cares? And so they're basically punting and they're saying, yeah, we're still going to redistribute wealth, but we're just going to make it look a little different. And then I also wonder whether if they do this block granting stuff, if that's going to be some phony accounting to make it look like they've done more spending cuts than they have. Now, again, I'm no expert on these financial markets. But
what? Politician would do that?
Yeah, a politician might do that. Can you? Yeah.
No.
Apple Wine says, deal faster. Oh, that's the same call that we tried to answer before. Yeah, if there was a new call, we would take it. So feel free to call in 760-888-5817. Although pretty soon I'm going to have to usurp total control because we need to do a couple things. okay, so we've talked some about Perry. Perry and the 10th Amendment stuff, where you say, let's go ahead and let the states have their little fiefdoms and socialist nirvanas. Wrong, completely wrong. So I think Perry is out of touch. I don't think he's a bad guy, except with respect to the religious stuff.
Oh, yeah,
he had that commercial where...
Oh, he was wearing the same jacket that Heath Ledger wore in Brokeback Mountain. Which was like a homosexual love story.
Right.
And he was talking against, I guess, homosexuals. Because he was equating Cub Scouts with homosexuals. What was it again? He was saying something like they let gays in the military, but they don't let kids. I forgot what it was. But anyway, it was funny. It was a bad choice, whoever. And you know what? You never know. Maybe he wasn't innocent. Maybe someone deliberately did that. Hey, wear this jacket.
Yeah. So with him, he has that issue of religious theocracy.
And
I think unrealistic.
No, unrealistic. Also, he's a fan of Islam. You know, it's a religion of peace and tolerance.
Well, this is the other thing. I don't know that he's a fan of it, but he's ignorant enough about the danger of it that makes him a problem.
Meaning, yeah, but then he shouldn't go out there and say it means peace and tolerance and all that, because he doesn't know. Like
right.
Bush. You know,
exactly.
Bush
That's
knew right. that he didn't know what Islam meant, but he still said it.
He says, ignore the race, start a news media network on the internet. Well, I mean, that would all be fine and good, but the news media network is going to be looking at the race.
That's right.
We love our suggestions in our chat room, but we'll sometimes have fun with them too. Okay, so we talked about Perry. Who else do we need? Now we got to talk about Gingrich and Romney. Sometimes I just feel between Gingrich and Romney that I'm just going to flip a coin.
Yeah.
Ugh. Which one has a better chance of beating Obama? I don't know. They had this whole thing today about which one was better at compromising with the other side. I always hate that question too. Which one is better at compromising with the other side?
Unbelievable. What a question to ask.
There's one interesting attack on Romney that they've been using that I did want to say something about.
They got to him, yeah. He turned a little red.
You're talking about his political career.
Right.
That attack, right? Yeah. So apparently he's been running for office since the 90s, basically. He's just always running for office.
Oh, right.
That's his life. So when he says he's in the private sector.
He always brags about it. And he almost like he's putting down the public sector. He's like, yeah, but you're running for the public office in the country, so I don't get it.
Right. Oddly enough, he was the only one to mention Obamacare.
Yeah. I can't believe they didn't mention Romneycare.
They had, 3.5 hours of debate or something
in the last two days.
And the only one who mentioned Obamacare explicitly was Romney. He mentioned it twice today. There was a mention by Ron Paul, who took a jab at Romney because of Romney putting single payer. And he said single payer. He didn't say Romneycare. Single payer in Massachusetts. But in terms of actually mentioning Obamacare, he mentioned Obamacare, Dodd-Frank as things that need to be gotten rid of. But I don't actually trust him to completely repeal either of those.
No. He'd Romney them. You know what I mean? He'd Romneyize them.
He'd give them plastic surgery.
He would, absolutely right.
He would give them plastic surgery. That's going to be my thing. So Romney wants everything to be pretty like him. He's going to give it plastic surgery.
He's like mussing up his hair now a little. You know.
He speaks the language of free market and principles, and then in the next minute he's going to put a sanction on China.
Yep. Slap some tariffs on them.
He talks about, he doesn't want to raise taxes on the American people, but as I recall that they called him on a couple debates ago, he plans to raise taxes on everybody who makes over $200,000, which, given the fact that the government has inflated the currency,
of the less, welfare state.
So there's Romney. Actually, I'm embarrassed to say, but I sort of was settled that Romney is the most electable among these people.
I don't know. I mean, think about that. Sorry. I made a poster. Electable. That's a real rallying cry.
Yeah.
Electability. It's like, oh my.
And you're trying to say, what is the least worst of all these options?
We just want to save ourselves from Obama. That's the bottom line. It really, really is. Save America from Obama. And I don't know, right now, could be Gingrich, could be Romney, I don't know. We'll see. It's good that they were really going at it today pretty hard,
Martin asked, is Obamacare actually called Obamacare? No, it is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act,
right.
as Derek says. Everybody's been calling
it. It's actually called the Destruction of America Act. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah. And of course, it's got so much else in that legislation. We've been talking about little bits of it, and we'll be talking about it a lot more with the Supreme Court about to hear it pretty soon. So, you know, in terms of Obamacare, we don't have any more Bachman to come in there and talk about full repeal of Obamacare. Once she was out of the race, they seemed to all drop talking about it, which really worried me. Maybe they all take it for granted now. I have no idea, but I don't necessarily trust Romney to repeal all of it. But then what about Gingrich? I don't trust Gingrich to repeal all of it either. Gingrich has some good ideas on foreign policy.
He does.
He's, I think, a bit better on immigration than some of the other candidates.
He probably would
he's
be less destructive.
A hodgepodge, though.
He probably would get away. He probably would be able to get away with less than Romney will be able to get away with and that Obama has been able to get away with because of his personality. He probably can't. I mean, in that sense, where a lot of people wouldn't be willing to actually...
So he'd actually have to sell people on substance?
Yeah, and they really won't listen. So that would be good in that sense, have a little somewhat weaker president in that sense. Outside, you know, with a war, he'll probably do his thing, but when it comes to passing legislation that his pet peeves, whatever, he probably wouldn't be able to. Probably.
You know, I could almost just flip a coin between the two of them. What do people say? Are people agreeing with me that you're probably going to rule out Santorum? You're going to rule out Ron Paul?
Oh, I have to.
You're going to rule out Perry,
yeah.
I think, because he's unrealistic. He's not. He's going to be out, I think, after South Carolina anyway,
I think he's clinging on a little. He's saying a few things, you know, that the other guys aren't. And, you know, he said one great thing. I forgot what it was, but because he's been so lame, but he said something really good. He promises to make the federal government, how do you call it?
The least consequential in your life as
right.
possible.
It's
that
a great
was
line.
Perry has a lot of good lines.
It's a great line, but can he deliver? And you know what? He hasn't messed up, actually, what he did. He blew it. Like, a few weeks ago, he even made a joke about it today.
Yeah, today he made a point of making sure he got to answer a question about the three. The three departments that he wanted to get rid of. Yeah,
right.
It was pretty funny. And he joke. I like him okay. He's maybe a slightly better Bush.
Yeah, maybe. No, he's a smarter Bush.
I just don't know if he has any hope
you know
anymore.
What that means.
I just don't know if he has any hope anymore. So Gingrich versus Romney. People in the chat room here seem to be saying that Romney is worse than Gingrich. Says one. So Gingrich, then someone else says that Gingrich is bad because too much Israel first. Well, I'm a stout supporter of Israel, so if that's wrong, then...
I've never felt that he's ever been too much Israel first, ever. He's been supportive of them, but never too much. Never.
And I think that Romney also say his first visit would be to Israel?
Right. If you are pro-Israel, you are considered, quote-unquote, to Israel. That's, you know, that's where we are today.
I'm pro-Israel. I'm very sympathetic with taking away the so-called aid packages to Israel and its enemies and just letting them do it. But we have to morally stand behind Israel and be prepared to militarily support them if necessary.
That's the only civilized
nation. Or work with them against Iran. I'm all for that. I don't know that Gingrich is bad in any of those ways. I think he would probably cut back some of the foreign aid. Gingrich sounds decent on foreign policy.
He doesn't seem too power hungry either. He doesn't. I mean, Romney does.
The problem with them, right? And this is the other thing that they do: their tax plans. They all have their little tax plans, and they get you
they're
all caught up in their tax plans. And this tax plan and that tax plan is going to create jobs. And they don't talk about the spending cuts.
No.
They all avoid talking about the spending cuts except
Ron Paul. And you would think that he would maybe be a reproach to them, but he hasn't been because he's so crazy in foreign policy. If he made more sense in foreign policy, they would have to answer his domestic policies. But he's so crazy that they think they can just ignore it. And they probably can because of it.
I've yet to see one debate in which they go down the row and ask the rest of them, will you cut as much as Ron Paul will? I would love to see them do that
but
and see them squirm.
The moderators, usually the left, like they were yesterday, you know, today, their whole agenda is to try to protect Obama.
Now, you know the way that they all talk about it. They do talk about cutting spending because they talk about cutting the size of government as a percentage of GDP. But... And this is the danger in this, right? They all have in their minds that when they put out their magic tax plan, repeal a couple regulations, tinker, tinker, tinker here and there, they're going to reduce waste or whatever, that the economy is going to start steaming so fast that they're going to be able to spend on all their little pet projects and fun stuff that they want to do, because all of them want to spend.
Right. I mean, look, they want to build the economy up so they can actually rape it.
They don't want to tell you how many dollars they're going to cut. What they'd like to do is tell you that there's a percentage of GDP, and they're counting on the fact that as soon as they take a few
And we'll be so happy because the economy is better. It's okay, so we won't complain too much about it. But they will spend. That's
yeah.
What they
do. So I don't know that I trust any of them.
Spenders in chief, and that's what they all want.
Gingrich versus Romney, I don't know.
Look, they're so bad that they haven't yet made us clear on anything. I like Gingrich on certain things. I like Romney's, I don't know.
One quick thing before we leave this topic. There is an attack that goes against Romney all the time, and they talk about whether Romney, in the enterprises that he managed, created jobs. So they'll say, oh, well, you know, you took over this thing and 1,700 jobs were lost and blah, blah, blah. They have job creation on the brain so much when they look at anything, they talk about job creation. And I think instead they should focus on wealth creation, right? Because if Romney comes in and him and his company, I understand it was called Bain, that they went in, they reorganized companies, and sometimes people were fired. But what is done in those situations, again, if it's a free market, if you have a free market, what you're doing is you are moving resources from less productive uses to more productive uses. You're saying that if 1,700 people are working here, then they are not creating wealth. So I would ask about anything of Romney. Was he creating wealth? And I would like to see him defend himself along those lines.
Yeah.
I don't know that he does as well and as strongly as he
could. But they don't
have
it in them to ask him that. They don't have it in them.
But, you know, job creation on the level of a government entity like a state or the entire country, that's fine. You know, Gingrich, he's so funny. He talks about, you know, job creation, and then he compares Romney's job creation to an entire country when he was a Speaker of the House. Apples and oranges, the worst comparison ever. So I don't really like either of them. I'm going to hold my nose and vote for one of them, and probably by the time it gets to California. I'm sorry, people. I would love to be able to tell you vote for one or the other. I have a slight idea that Romney would maybe be a little less bad, but there are things I like about
Gingrich,
too.
Gingrich would be a little bad. I mean, that's where in terms of who will be the most destructive, Obama, and then Romney, and then possibly Gingrich, possibly.
Maybe.
Because so, Romney with full power? Oof.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to take some of the time that we have left here to talk about John David Lewis. Most of you maybe who are listening here in the chat room are familiar with who he is. John David Lewis was an objectivist intellectual. He lived a short life, only 56, 57 years, 1955 to 2012, and he passed away earlier this week. He had a long, actually not too long, battle with cancer. As I recall, it was about a 2.5-year battle with cancer by the time he was diagnosed. I think I remember seeing him in summer of 2009.
Right. We went to their class.
And I think he may have had a little bit of an issue with his throat and didn't know.
I didn't notice that. I think you did.
He thought he had a cold or something, I think, but I don't know. So I knew John Lewis for many years. Actually, I was one of the many people. He was so gracious in doing this. There were a lot of people who went to visit him in Cambridge when he was doing his PhD, and he would take you around. Some galleries with some plaster casts of ancient sculptures and stuff that he would show you. And Leonard, who I was with at the time, was very interested, of course, in seeing sculpture. He loves sculpture more than any other art form. And I remember also going on a boat ride on a river with him and going to an old pub and hanging out. So I did that. And I saw him, of course, at various objectivist events throughout the years, different conferences, a conference in Austin. I remember spending time with him. He was, and everybody, if you've read the tributes, you can see a tribute on the Ayn Rand Institute website that they made. They have a whole memoriam page for John Lewis, and there's all sorts of good resources there where you can read works. Check it out. He was truly benevolent.
Yeah.
True. I mean, just amazing. He had so much
enthusiasm,
energy,
passion,
and enthusiasm. Go, 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 go. He was super productive. His heart was always in the right place. He was a true intellectual, digging into all of the classical historical material and milking it for all it's worth and taking all the lessons out of it and applying it to all the things that we have today. In particular, he was concerned with foreign policy.
Yeah, he brought a historical context to it all. Dealing with the war today.
So he dove in. He got his PhD in classics in 2001 at University of Cambridge in Cambridge. And I think I remember when we went, he was at the stage of defending. My memory's kind of fuzzy. It's 10 years now. So, you know, just super go-getter. And the thing that I didn't realize, I knew he was a bit older when he started his career. I guess he got his PhD when he was 46.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? So you start an entirely different career. You get your degree when you're 46, and then you go on to write 3 books in the next 10 years. Super amazingly productive, tons of energy. Just like I said, so super benevolent. So everything you've heard about him was definitely true. And I highly recommend looking at some of his works. Nothing Less Than Victory is his most recent book, Princeton University Press, 2010. He also wrote Early Greek Lawgivers and also Solon the Thinker, Political Thought in Archaic Athens.
Derek says something here. He goes, his 2006 article, No Substitute for Victory, is one of the best pieces on foreign policy ever written.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah. I mean, it is phenomenal.
This is the one I have right in front of me here.
Yeah.
And Bosch used this piece extensively in his research when he was preparing to work on The Infidel. He just soaked up.
I devoured it. And what I did with these articles, and I threw out a lot of them. I never threw out his. And I redlined a lot. And there was literally pages where it looked like I underlined each sentence.
Yes.
That just tells you how great it was.
He was a true scholar. He had such enthusiasm for his work. He had been a businessman, and he decided at a certain point that he would be much happier being a scholar, and he just decided to do it.
Yeah.
And he excelled and excelled and excelled. Most recently, he'd been teaching at Duke in North Carolina, and some people that I know out there, Richard Salzman, got to spend a lot of time with him in the last several years, which was good because Salzman is fun, and I think he probably had a lot of fun in those last years. So I haven't seen him a lot for a while. I think the last time that we saw him in person was when we went
Vegas
to the recommitment ceremony.
Right.
Yeah, he had a a renewal of vows ceremony with his wife Casey in Las Vegas.
We had spoken to him a little before that, and
he
invited us to be there.
We were so honored that he invited us to go.
And we were talking about he liked my work. He liked Pigman. He liked what I was doing with it. So that was great.
Yeah. So I am very, very, very sad. Now, we've lost to cancer this year 2 tremendously productive individuals at the same age.
Yeah.
Both born in 1955, both lost to cancer. And of course, recently, Dr. Lewis, John Lewis, he was giving speeches about government involvement in the healthcare industry and how some people had speculated that maybe if government hadn't been involved, that he would have gotten better care. I don't know. What I do know is he probably was not irrational in his decision how to treat his cancer, unlike Steve Jobs. And that still, I mean, I think his was a particularly pernicious and, fast-growing cancer. I had thought, though, that when we saw him in Vegas, that at that time they thought he might have beaten it.
Yeah, he was literally up
and
about. And
it was only about a year later maybe that
he lost some of his voice, but besides that, he seemed...
Well, and he had tremendous energy.
He did. He was...
Even after going through surgery and radiation, chemotherapy, whatever treatments he'd had, he still had tremendous energy.
He was teaching a class. I mean, he was teaching that course.
So everything that the good things that you've heard about him from every contact I've ever had with him, completely true. I never sensed an ounce of hostility in this guy anywhere. Just total benevolence, energy, productivity.
Even when speaking about the enemy.
I wasn't really close to him you know, so I couldn't tell you, oh my gosh, he lived the objective. I think he lived the objective virtues from everything I saw. He lived this philosophy and just went gangbusters. And his wife, Casey, is super sweet too, also very energetic, which I think you'd have to be very energetic to keep up with John Lewis. Yeah.
When I said that, I said, even when speaking about the enemy, is he was very clear on what the goal was.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't get, you know, bogged down in the evil of the enemy and get cynical about it. No, he actually wanted to defeat them. And his pieces he wrote on William Tecumseh Sherman, the general in Civil War. He wrote about the World War II, the Japanese, and then he wrote this other piece. It was for the Objective Standard. And I think two of those were chapters of his book. And it was just powerful, powerful, great stuff. And the way he wrote about the enemy, what we have to do in clear terms. I mean, you rarely see that. You know, you hear people write about the enemy and about the ideology. He was thinking in terms of what we have to do as a country, as a people, and what are, you know.
Now, he appeared at the Ayn Rand Center's 10th anniversary of 9/11 event.
It was September 9th, I think, this year.
But it was
in, last year, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it was in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, he was there. He was talking about the enemy. He had some slides about the enemy and how they raised their kids and the suicide killers.
And then also that piece that appeared in the Objective Standard about the philosophy of self-abnegation.
Which was another excellent piece. Just a reminder of how far we are from where we have to be, you know, as a country, morally, with the battle that we're waging.
This idea that the reason that they're fighting us is because of something that we did, and that we need to make all these concessions and give all this foreign aid and essentially bribe Pakistan not to hit us with the nuclear weapons that they have.
And Rob Paul thinks that we can pull away and not give them any money. You know what I mean? And that's it. So we're good. That's Ron Paul's quote thinking about this.
No, he was right on. He had the best views of foreign policy. And the good thing about him is that his conclusions about foreign policy were strengthened by his historical knowledge about
completely
all the battles of the past.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. And he wrote about World War II and Japan as well, and the dropping of the.
And the Greek Wars, and, you know, the fact that there were savages always going to be looking to kill civilized people, civilized countries, and you have to fight them this way. It's all, you know, it's the same battle that mankind has always fought. He puts it in its historical context and what we have to do. And it's great stuff. If you haven't read the articles, you got to read the articles, and then you got to read the book also.
Well, and I think that what I want to do is kind of feature little bits and pieces of his work over the next several weeks.
Maybe a chapter
podcast
here, a chapter there, some of the essays.
Right.
This one is fantastic. The one from Sherman, he also does connect it to today's war. And, you know, how would a General Sherman fight the quote-unquote war on terror? You know, and John Lewis called it political Islam, totalitarian Islam, which, as people know, I don't like to use any word besides Islam, but he did use another one, which is pretty good in terms of a modifier, state Islam.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. You know, sometimes I use organized Islam, but state Islam is, people understand that instantly. You're not saying, you're not modifying anything else besides saying Islam as a state. What is it? What is that? What does it mean?
Well, especially if you have a state like Iran that is basically motivated by that. State Islam, that's a perfect example of it. I think they're talking about radiation treatments and cancer. Yeah, cancer has been costing us a lot in this last year, these very, very productive people. And I heard something about the fact that he, when he was in graduate school, that he would work during the day and then be up all night studying.
In the library, the only one there while everyone's sleeping.
Yeah, so he was
latecomer, so I guess he felt he had to really, really catch up.
Yeah, and I mean, imagine how inspiring that is. Anybody here, you know, is listening.
Incredible.
If you think about the fact that you just decide to do a career change, and I guess he must have done it about 5 years earlier, so say he's 41. He probably had an undergraduate degree, so he pursues a graduate degree at about that age.
I wonder what it was. I wonder what happened. He just clearly decided to change his entire career.
Yeah. Robert says, what I liked most about John was that his passion leaped out of every fiber of his being.
Yeah.
He fought for the future and lived in it. Well done, Dr. Lewis.
He did, and it's
true.
A big loss.
Yeah.
Definitely is.
Richard, who's on the chat room here, he says, if you want some inspiration about objectivist influence, listen to John Lewis Atlantis Legacy Talk on ARI's memorial page. Yes, they've got the whole page there, and they allow you to listen to that for free, and there's a slideshow as well.
We also had the honor of being in Boston in 2009, July 4th, when he gave his Tea Party speech.
Right.
That was great.
Excellent.
That was great.
Excellent. And we were in a class then as well, I think.
Yeah, we were.
Or were we in the class only in 2010? Now I'm
2009.
Remembering. Okay.
2009?
Well, we went 2009 and 10.
I don't know.
And 10 was in Vegas where they had the ceremony. And I think probably we were in a class then, but I can't remember in 2000. Oh, the years, they blend. But it's very sad. I'm very glad that he changed careers when he did and that he was able to do the things that he loved solid for this 10-year period. He, as far as I know, you know, he was very, very productive, so that nobody could ever in academia eschew him because of his lack of productivity. I mean, he just published. But I think his ideology got him in trouble at the university where he was first. I think he was tenured at Ashland, and people there were giving him some problems. It was becoming very unpleasant because of ideology there, which he then eventually moved to Duke, where there was a program that was more suited to our philosophic leanings. Academia can be a very difficult place, and he just managed to keep a good, positive attitude and keep going and keep being productive and fighting
a
good fight.
You know, his kind of style can do that.
Yeah.
Might disagree with him philosophically, but he's just likable. So they'll forgive him his ideas, you know.
Listen to his legacy talk. He talks about which...
Maybe how he made the choice from business.
Exactly, the
good
transition, right?
I don't think I heard that. I don't think I did, actually.
And this, you know, I think there are people who... You get involved in objectivism and then you think, okay, well, I'm going to go be an objectivist intellectual. And it's not necessarily the right choice for them, but that's a natural inspiration for them to have. Clearly, this was the right choice for him because he thrived and was just super enthusiastic in that realm. And that was really nice to see. So I think there are a lot of people who do get involved and they think, I want to do that, but it's not always the right thing to do. And for him, excellent, excellent. And like I said, every contact that I had with him was wonderful, super nice. I was always, always impressed with him. So when this memorial tribute was, I think, written by a friend of his who's associated with ARI. And when I read it, I actually was getting teared up. I guess I'm kind of a softie. I don't know.
It's too hard.
And I mean, I knew for years that he was sick, and I did hear in the fall that
the
cancer had come back,
work.
But I was still somewhat surprised. So.
And doing it in a way with a lot of people, you know,
with
passion.
Let's dig in and apply some of his lessons to the foreign policy challenges that come up in particular. Obviously, the Obamacare fight, that's going to come up as well, and we can use some of what he did as well.
I mean, in his talks.
Yeah, he was out there to the end fighting. So now people here, I'm wondering what we've got in the chat room about his career change. He said that he had reached as high as he cared to go at his job. He discovered the national company advisor had used government power to ruin their market in another state. Yeah.
So he felt it was time to get out and do something that he always wanted to, possibly, besides that.
That's the problem. I mean, you make that choice. You say, suppose you really do like being in business and producing something of value for the world. But at a certain point, you say, okay, the only way that that's being done is
corrupt means,
you know, bumping up against government here and there and having to deal with corrupt government and make very difficult choices. Okay, I'm going to make a switch, and I don't want it to be abrupt. I do want to talk about one thing before we leave. And I've got my little project, my little kind of effort to spread Ayn Rand's ideas out in the world. It's called the Ayn Rand Bot on Twitter. So it's just Ayn Rand and then B-O-T at the end. If you're on Twitter, follow it if you haven't followed it yet. We're nominating it for a Shorty Award, which is an award given for short content out on the internet.
Social media.
So, yeah, it's a, you know, social media short content. So she's under the author category. She's currently in second behind J.K. Rowling.
Who doesn't
if
tweet.
If you follow the Ayn Rand bot, you can learn more. Also nominate the Ayn Rand Center for a Shorty Award in the activism category if you get a chance. Okay? So go ahead and look up the Ayn Rand bot for president. It'd be better than what we have now, right? But the Shorty Awards, I think you can find them if you Google them. So again, Ayn Rand bot is under the Shorty Award for author, and the Ayn Rand Center is under the Shorty Award for activism. And then Bosch, actually Bosch, where are you in the Shorty?
Blogger.
Okay, under the blogger category.
I haven't
gotten
many votes, but
All it requires is a tweet. Everybody have a good week if you can. We're going to keep watching this news, and we'll keep bringing it to you. Talk to you next week.
Take care.